views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and I'm on a mission to help shift the planet to a more peaceful and loving way of being by awakening one woman at a time, especially moms, so that they can live the life they've come here to live and truly make a difference in the world. So much of life revolves around how we communicate with others. My guest today, Dr. Mary Beth Dame, is here to talk to us about what it means to be a powerful communicator. She's going to teach us how to make sure that we're not giving our power away when we really need it most. And she's also going to share some secrets about creating a strong presence in a variety of situations so that you can use this information in your own life and also to help guide your children. Mary Beth is an expert in the function and use of the human voice. She's all about helping people connect with their authentic self and honesty of spirit. And she really focuses in on the unseen energetic components of communication, which I personally find very fascinating. She has written a couple of books, one of which I actually just finished reading called Presence, Confidence, and Personal Power. So it is going to come into our conversation a little bit today. Mary Beth, welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it is so nice to have you here sharing your wisdom with us. I thought that we could maybe start with you giving us a bit of your story, specifically how you got interested in this area of work.
Right. That's a pretty long story, Debbie, but let me just say
the one or two sentence version.
I started out as a child singing all the time. So the voice was a passion of mine, and I went on to study it in college and later in graduate school. But what happened when, and I won a fellowship to go to London after I'd been teaching in university for a while. And what happened is I started working in the business world, which was a bit stunning to me, but I got invited to do some workshops. And what I realized is that basic communication skills at that point were more important than the voice. I'm not sure that's totally true now, but people didn't know how to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And I realized, in all honesty, that no one ever teaches us good communication skills. It's assumed. And that's how I got more and more involved in it. And executives that I advised, I realized, you know, don't say it this way, say it this way, it's much nicer. And things like that just crept into my life. So it was a little bit by stealth that I got into communication skills.
Well, and isn't that always the way it seems to me that you notice things that are going on, but also you notice how when you change the way you say things, it affects how the other person responds to you, right? Mm-hmm. And that just makes such a big difference. I mean, teaching people those skills is huge. So we really want our kids, especially, to have those skills, because I think communication and global communication, global awareness is a big part of where we're headed. Right.
Well, I think it's the biggest issue in society. I mean, if we learned how to speak to each other properly, there are a lot of things that wouldn't happen that are unpleasant.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things that fascinated me with your book is all of the underlying pieces. There's just so much going on there. So let's move into understanding communication.
Okay.
There's actually a quote in your book that I want to share and then have you expand upon a little bit, because it sort of jumped out at me as that's such a profound statement. All right. So here's the quote. The most important aspect of any communication lies in one critically important attitude. It is simply this: I want to be here. Can you explain this idea a little bit further?
Yes. As a performer, I know that any performer on stage who isn't fully involved is not going to involve their audience. And this tipped over into the corporate world when I was working there. I asked executives before a talk, do you really want to be there? And they would say no. And then I would say, what makes you think that your audience even wants to listen to you? Because they will pick up on that. Mm-hmm. And I realized how many times that we're not fully there, that our mind is somewhere else, that we've got our mind on 10 other chores we need to be doing, that we are not starting with what I call a blank screen. We're starting with a full page already written, and there's no space for anything else on there. And so it just became so important and so obvious that we have to drop everything. There's nowhere else that I can be right this minute, Debbie, than talking with you.
Yes.
So the best thing I can do is be completely here.
Yes. And this is such an important message for parents to hear, because how often are we trying to juggle 20 different tasks and our child is saying, you know what, mom? You know what, mom? You know, and we're going, yeah, just tell me. And they can tell that you're not invested in what they're telling you. So, oh my gosh, that's such a big thing. You know, I remember reading this, and of course, I was aware of this, but I really do want you to point it out as well, is that you mentioned in the book, you're not going to forget all the things you know in those few minutes while that person is talking. So quit trying to hold on to your thoughts, right? Quit panicking and trying to know exactly what you're going to say next, and just relax into the conversation.
Yes. And one analogy that I like to give with that is, you know, on your computer, you've got everything on the hard drive. Okay.
Right.
So you start out with a blank screen when you're writing, and then you edit, and then you can save what you want and throw away what you don't.
Right.
And you can go back to what's there. So your brain is much better than you think at remembering things. So you're not going to forget.
Yes.
And well, also what happens, and one other thing, what happens is that if we're really listening and we're really there and we forget what it was we planned to say, then something much more spontaneous and natural can happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I was actually just going to say as well. I've been there where my brain has gone totally blank. And I know in that moment, what's happened is about three ideas have come in at the same time and kind of crashed. And my computer goes down.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you're in a position of, all right, even if there's a tiny bit of silence, there's that, those few seconds of silence are often a gift to someone who's in a conversation with you. So
And you know what? It's very interesting. I'm dealing with a client right now who doesn't know how to leave silence there. People panic when there's silence because they think it's a long time. But for the other person, the one listening, it's not a long time at all.
Yes.
And I've never known anybody to walk away during a pause.
Oh, true enough. And, you know, there's nothing to me more awkward than when someone is sharing and they're almost not even stopping to take a breath in between, as if they fear that you're going to interject. And so they're like, blah, 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 and you're going, holy, I need you to take a pause, take a break.
Yes, and this person was sort of like that.
Yes. No, I have listened to many do that. And I've even done it myself where I really do want to get a point across and I think the other person isn't going to let me. And so I've done it and it feels awkward. I don't like them when that happens. So you say that your energy and presence start with your feet. What does that mean?
Okay. One of the things that I've found in the work that I do with people is that very few of them are actually grounded. And grounding, to me, starts with your feet. Mm. And one of the interesting things that I learned from the martial arts was that if your feet are turned out at all, and a lot of people's are, that you are, your energy field is actually weak. You are a pushover. So I started playing with this. And it was amazing, the change in people when they have feet that are parallel, like 11, like at 11s, I say. Mm-hmm. They don't have, your feet don't have to be together. They can be apart, but they, your toes need to be straight and not turned out. And when I get people to do that, first of all, there's a change in the voice, but there's a huge change in the presence. And it's very subtle, but it's not in the voice. It's very clear that there's a much more depth. There's much more persona, and there's much more authenticity available to that person. And it's funny. Yeah, change the feet and change your voice.
Nice. The feet turn out to be such important things. Like even in some of the programs I teach about anger, when you're really angry, one of the best things you can do is focus on the bottom of your feet. Notice, okay. Notice the bottom of your feet. So they're critical pieces. You should never ignore your feet, it turns out. I love that. I love what you just said though about being grounded, because there is so much value in that. And if we had more time, I would suggest that we actually follow that a little bit further. But I want to go on to this next question. It might even pull us back to it. I'm not sure. Okay. So if your words are far more powerful when you're centered, how does a person achieve this centered state?
Okay. And we are, in a way, going back to grounded. But let me start with one of the things that they're teaching in sports psychology that the Eastern philosophies have known for years is set an intent. What is my intent? For example, what is my intent for today? What's yours? What's my intent in talking with my child? What's my intent with talking with my boss? And my intent might be that I'd like that person to go away feeling better than they came. That could be an intent. Or it could be something else. But it's really important to set an intent, because that tells your mind what it is you want, and it sets it up to happen for you. That's the first thing.
Okay.
The second about being centered is being grounded, because as soon as you are ungrounded, say for instance, a lot of people in your position might be sitting there talking to me with your feet crossed and up. So you're not grounded.
Right.
People will talk without having their feet on the floor. But it's also a matter of really centering in yourself, because the moment there's any fear, we go, we take a big breath. We come up way up to our chest. You know, our larynx ends up under our nose, and we have lost our possibility of being grounded. So one thing that I show people, and I'll give you a little exercise right now that you can do that is really good for grounding. And it takes imagination. It's not realistic, but it has realistic benefits. Okay.
Okay.
It's imaginary breath. And you imagine taking your breath in at the base of your spine, and you bring that breath up the back to the top of your head. And then you exhale by taking the breath back down the front of the spine to meet where it started. So okay. That's a long, narrow loop of air. And what it does is keep you centered in your spines, which is deep in your body, instead of superficially up in your chest or your lungs or your throat. And that with the feet will help you immensely stay centered.
Yikes, that's beautiful. That I'm just thinking that is such a perfect tool to help you be grounded, but also to be centered, but to be calm. I'm thinking of all the billions of people who panic the moment that they're in front of a crowd and have to speak, whether it be at a parent council meeting or whether it be in front of a group of 100, you know, that have gathered and you're the keynote speaker. It can really throw you off. And this is a great way to get yourself back into your body.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So I have to make a comment. I love what you said there about, you know, your larynx ends up under your nose. Is that why our voices go higher when we get into that more panic sort of state?
Yes, because your whole, you know, your voice, your instrument is you. And so if I have any tension in my throat or in my chest, then it's going to have an effect on the sound. And I'll give you an example. So if I get up here and I've now squeezed my chest a bit, and you can hear that I'm quite tense, and you hear the change in the sound of my voice.
Right.
And basically what it does is just narrow the whole resonator system of the voice and make it tighter and increase the pitch. I make the pitch higher.
Wow. That is so interesting. I, for some reason, I started thinking about how body image is such a big thing for so many people, mm-hmm. and how you might go up on stage and think, oh, suck in my gut, because yeah. I don't want people noticing it. But as soon as you do, you have changed, like you say, your container. You've changed yeah. the way your voice is going to sound. Yeah. You're affecting everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So many people think the voice is just your throat, and that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yes. Well, many of us have heard now, because there's so many shows like The Voice or American Idol, Canadian Idol, all those kinds of shows. Mm-hmm. Most of us have now learned that, okay, you have to get deep into your diaphragm, but we don't always even know how to do that. So I think that's probably why coaching is always going to be needed when it comes to things like this. So
I just thinking of your voice as coming from your whole body. You don't even have to think about your diaphragm, to be honest. It's going to yes. work whether you want it to or not. But it's a matter of thinking lower. Yeah. And I've said to somebody, put your mouth down in your pelvis. Sounds funny.
That's a good one. I don't know that you want that one on a post-it note around your house.
No.
That's awesome. You know, this reminds me too, when we were talking before, I guess I was watching The Voice at the time, and it came up in conversation. And you mentioned to me about how when somebody is really in their body, being their authentic self, how it changes the feel of the song.
It only changes the feel of the song, it's compelling. An audience yes. is totally magnetized to someone who is really authentic in front of them. And it doesn't matter whether it's singing or speaking. It's however that person is in themselves is going to relate directly to how compelling their message is, no matter what medium.
Right. Well, I just remember you mentioning it, and then my husband and I were watching The Voice, and I said, I understand now why that person singing that song gave me goosebumps. Mm-hmm. Their voice is beautiful, but all of their voices were beautiful. That one gave me goosebumps. It, you know, she did everything right, because, you know, it was compelling for me.
Yes. And, yeah. you know, some people call it presence, some people call it charisma, but for me, it's compelling. It's yes. just simply compelling. You're drawn into it.
Nice. Okay, I sort of took us off on a little detour there, so I'm going to bring us back. And okay. let's focus in on listening, because listening is such a big part of communication. And unfortunately, I think that it's something we often neglect to do, especially in our homes. We're just not good listeners. So could you maybe give us like three tips for being a good listener?
Right. First of all, stop multitasking. Hmm. We are good at multitasking, but multitasking is not a recipe for good listening. And it goes back to something I said earlier today. Clear your screen. Clear your mind for the moment to hear what they have to say. And drop that need to be somewhere else or doing something else or wanting to do something else. And the other thing you can do is say, you know, I don't have time to discuss this now. Can we talk about this later? And the really important follow-up is you make a time. Yes. And you can do that with children. You can say, you know, Johnny, I want to really talk to you about this. I don't have time right now. Could we plan to talk at 4:00?
Hmm.
That way they're honored. I think the whole issue about listening is that the other person doesn't feel honored if you don't hear them.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter whether you agree or not. It has to do with just listening and then responding. But hear them out. If you interrupt in the middle, knowing you already kind of that you don't necessarily agree, you might find that they're not going to say exactly what you thought they were going to say. So it's also about doing away with expectations of what you're going to hear.
Nice. Yes, that is such a key piece. And if you start with that blank slate, then you are getting rid of those expectations. You're just listening.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice. And I love what you said there about setting up the time to say, you know, I can't listen to you right now. I'm trying to make supper. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And I want to give this my full attention. So let's talk right after supper. We're going to sit down and you can share this story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. I like that a lot. And well, there's so many pieces to that, but you kind of touched on this one. So let's move on into it. In your book, you talk about accepting and honoring differences. And so you were just mentioning you might not agree with them, especially if you already know you don't agree with them. It's very hard to hear someone's opinion being different than yours, especially when it's someone who you love, who's very close to you, and to allow that to be. So can you maybe give some suggestions for how we can honor and accept those differences?
Wow. Okay. One, I want to give a little bit of history of my thinking about this first. And that is that one of the things that I learned from living in different cultures in Europe and various things was that, you know, we all have different ways of living. But one of the things we're taught in school is that there's only one right answer. All our testing is about one right answer. We spend our lives needing to be right to pass whatever test or part of life we're doing. And that creates an issue in that we don't know how to look at different possibilities. So one person's right answer in one place may not be that right answer in another place. And then these two people meet and all of a sudden they both think each other are wrong.
Mm.
And that's why this whole concept of saying, wait a minute, there are a lot of possibilities, not only one right answer. That's something that's so ingrained in our culture that I think it's going to take a while to undo. And that's why I say, for the moment, if nothing else, honor the other person's difference. It's their path. It's their life. It's their way of learning. So honor and support them as a human being. And this happens in families. My goodness. I certainly was unlike anybody in my family. So, sometimes I was honored. Sometimes it wasn't.
Right.
And that can happen with children. And that's unfortunate.
Well, it really is, especially if we kind of shut them down as a result of it. Mm-hmm. So I often like to say to parents, you know, you're better off to say, help me understand your point of view, or mm-hmm. help me to understand where you're coming from or why you think this is so important. And to do it, put on their curiosity. I call it a detective's cap, but to open up to curiosity rather than think that things have to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one more piece that I really want us to have time to talk about, but I can see we're almost out of time. So let's just move ahead quickly and talk for a minute about this gift that you have created for the listeners today. I know that you've made something that people can sign up for, and there will be a link for that on my blog as well as the Transformation Talk Radio page. But is there anything you'd like to say about this gift that you've created?
Yeah, I did a lot of thought after I spoke with you, and I realized how important it is for parents to have a way of not only speaking to children, but teaching children a way of communicating that would help us, well, literally change the world in the broad scope. And it involves some of the things that we've talked about today, but it's 10 things that a parent should know about helping children learn to communicate better. So it's a little article in the form of a list with some explanations, and that's what I'm offering to any of those listening today. I think I wish I had known this when I was younger, and I wish my parents had known it too.
Nice. Okay. Well, we do not have enough time to go back to that other question, but I'm going to talk to you about maybe adding a little blurb onto this article that you have created that mm-hmm. explains how parents can use children's stories to really bring out their own expressiveness, because it's such a neat idea. All right.
Okay.
But for us today, we unfortunately are out of time. So you have a website, marybethdame.com, which I'm going to just spell that one quickly. M-E-R-I-B-E-T-H, that's Marybeth, Dame, D-A-Y-M, as in mom, E.com. And so you can check out her website. Oh, Marybeth, it has been such fun having you on the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show with us today. I am so sorry that we're out of time already, because I think communication is such a foundational piece of relationships. There's so much more that we could cover together. And I love how you shine a light on some of the pieces that a lot of us can overlook without even realizing it. So thank you so much for sharing with us. And a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in and spreading the word. I so appreciate you. With much respect for the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik and her guest, Dr. Marybeth Dame, wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com.